Today on the Matt Walsh Show, we have now crossed the Rubicon. AI-generated race hoaxes are officially here. I'll tell you about the first case, which will certainly not be the last, unfortunately. Also, Florida manages to shut down its college protester encampments in 5 minutes. How did they pull that off? And we have yet another George Floyd 2.0 candidate. This one also died while being detained by police as he shouted that he can't breathe. Will riot season begin again? And in our daily cancellation, a woman with tattoos all over her face complains that she's having trouble finding a job. Who could have seen that coming? We'll talk about all that and more today on The Matt Walsh Show. Talking about how ChatGPT and artificial intelligence are going to change the world. Big tech companies are investing heavily in AI for search, but they're also the same big tech companies that determine your search results. And that's why I use ExpressVPN to add a layer of protection between me and big tech. The ExpressVPN app hides my unique app IP address on all of my devices. This makes it much more difficult for big tech to identify who I am and match my activity back to me. ExpressVPN is so easy to use. Turn it on. All you got to do is tap one button on your phone or computer and you're protected. ExpressVPN goes beyond shielding you from big tech. It encrypts every bit of your online traffic, ensuring your safety from hackers and prying eyes, leaving no room for compromise. The best part is that one ExpressVPN subscription covers up to 5 devices simultaneously, so your whole family can use it. Don't let big tech exploit your data any longer. Take control with ExpressVPN. Visit expressvpn.com/Walsh now and enjoy an exclusive offer of 3 months free. ExpressVPN.com/Walsh. That's expressvpn.com/Walsh. Back in January, a television news crew with CBS Baltimore showed up at the home of a high school principal named Eric Eiswirt looking for an interview. And once the crew arrived, they didn't record any newsworthy footage whatsoever. Eric Eiswirt wasn't even home. Nevertheless, CBS went ahead and aired very clear images of the man's house on their evening broadcast. And they did that for one reason, which is that a mob demanded it. At the time, Eiswirt was accused of making racist, anti-black comments on tape in front of several administrators at the school. Through a representative, Eiswirt had already denied making the comments, but the media didn't care. It's the kind of story the media loves to report. You have a white principal at a struggling, mostly black school who had supposedly validated all of their paranoia about white supremacy. It's a great story. So without verifying the recording in any way, the media immediately went to his home to harass him. Watch.
Now, other news you're following tonight. A disturbing audio recording is circulating in the Baltimore County community tonight. The recording is allegedly the principal of Pikesville High School making racist and anti-Semitic comments about students, community members, and staff. My
name is Pikesville High School's principal, Eric Eiswirt, is in hot water over an audio recording making rounds on social media containing racist and anti-Semitic comments.
He needs to be removed from the school ASAP.
Davina McCain's son is a student at Pikesville High.
But to hear him say that about kids, that's horrible. I mean, absolutely horrible.
WJZ is choosing not to air the recording at this time because we are unable to verify the authenticity of it. But in it, a person purported to be the principal can be heard making disparaging comments about the test scores of African-American students. The person on the recording then makes an offensive comment about an African-American staff member at the school and members of the Pikesville Jewish community. WJZ stopped by Eiswirt's home to see if he had a comment about the recording.
Hi. I'm looking for Principal Eiswirt. He's at home right now.
A person spoke to us through the front door.
I mean, I'm here to hear his story.
But nobody's going to believe his story anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Now, whatever possible justification those reporters thought they had for going to the principal's home, it was over when they got there and he didn't answer the door. That's the moment the CBS news crew should have packed their cameras up and gone back to the station. But they didn't. Instead, they spoke to some unnamed person behind the door, and they aired that footage instead so that millions of people could see exactly what the front of this principal's house looks like. And they did that after heavily implying that he said horrible racist things on a recording, even though they admit that they haven't authenticated the recording, and they say they can't even play it on air because of how unreliable the recording may be. So all in all, this is what journalistic malpractice looks like, and we've seen many examples of this kind of thing. But CBS wasn't alone. The local NBC News affiliate had similar coverage. They didn't play the recording of these alleged racist comments either, but they did speak to several students who said confidently that this principal needed to resign immediately. Watch.
Kyrie Stewart joins us live outside of the school. And Kyrie, you spoke with students and parents, so what do they have to say about all this?
Yes, well, this has pretty much the whole community talking. You know, since we've been out here, we've had parents and students just come up to us and tell us just how shocking and disturbed they are by all of this. In fact, I want you all to take a look at this video. Out of an abundance of caution, police officers were actually at the school today, you know, just for safety reasons. Now, we're not going to air the recording, but in it, the person is heard making offensive and inappropriate comments about Black students, the Pikesville Jewish community, and members of the high school staff. Now, again, we spoke with parents and students who told us that they're shocked to hear the recording. Take a listen to what they have to say.
It's on social media now, so it's just like, and I go to Pikesville, and it's like all over the place, yeah. So it's just like weird.
I honestly think he should be fired. I don't think he should be working with children if he's going to be speaking that way towards people. He shouldn't work with people at all.
Okay, so the police are called in because they're worried about violence at the school. Meanwhile, the reporters are visiting this man's home and broadcasting footage of where he lives. And the news stations are insinuating that this principal said something so horrible that they can't even air it on television. Now, to be fair, they didn't have to air it because other media outlets were spreading it all over the internet. Philip Lewis, the deputy editor of Huffington Post, posted the audio along with a message implying the principal's guilt. Here's what he wrote at the time, back in January. He said, quote, Baltimore County Public Schools is investigating the principal at Pikesville High for alleged derogatory remarks about students and staff. A voice believed to be the principal can be heard ranting about Black students and Jewish families. Well, who exactly believed the voice to be the principal? And whoever those people are they reliable? The Huffington Post editor doesn't say. That's not clarified. He certainly didn't investigate the recording himself, but in reply to Philip's post, a lot of people called for the principal's termination anyway. One person said, what's there to investigate? And that was a common sentiment. It's like, well, here it is, according to the social media mob. We have him on tape, dead to rights. He's obviously racist. So here is the audio of the principal's alleged racist meltdown, which the Huffington Post guy posted and which went viral at the time. Here it is.
You're me and only me. You know, I seriously don't understand why I have to constantly put up with these dumbasses here every day. Between these ungrateful Black kids who can't test their way out of a paper bag, or these teachers who don't get it, how hard is it to get these students to meet their grade level expectations? Lawrence and Ravenel should have never been hired. And don't let me get started on DJ. I'm going to drag his Black ass out of here one way or another. I'm going to get something to stick. I'm just so sick of the inadequacies of these people. And if I have to get one more complaint from one more Jew in this community, I'm going to join the other side. Kathy, I'm done.
Now, maybe you heard this back when it was first circulating. I remember hearing it at the time. And it seemed authentic to me on a technical level, at least. It didn't sound digitally altered necessarily. It sounds like a person, some person anyway, saying those things. But it also sounds strangely off in a few different ways. It was obviously suspicious for a principal in Baltimore, of all places, to say these kinds of things in front of other people. People with these kinds of views aren't getting hired to teach in Baltimore, much less run the schools. And everything he says is so over the top, even in the context of a supposedly racist rant. He's attacking Black kids and Jewish people in the span of 45 seconds for some reason. It's like listening to a leftist comic book idea of what a bigoted school administrator would sound like. I'm going to drag his Black ass out of here. Like, no white principal is saying that. It's just not going to happen. And then the line at the end, I'm going to join the other side, it doesn't make any sense, but it's so on the nose as to be almost comical. But local news media in Baltimore didn't share any of this skepticism. One popular talk show suggested that the tape was almost certainly legitimate because the voice in the recording mentioned specific people at the school by name. That was the reasoning. It can't possibly be fake because someone put the bare minimum amount of effort into it to make it seem legitimate, which must mean that it is legitimate. Listen.
investigating this to determine whether or not it's real or not. And if it were me and I was still in office, I would wait. I would wait until authenticating this type of thing, unless these folks know something about this principle that we don't know.
Well, if it's not him, then whoever did this is really good at that. Yeah. And I just find it hard to believe that there's someone associated with Pikesville High School that has so much of an axe to grind that they're willing to get this incredibly good artificial intelligence recording and make it sound so real and personal mm-hmm. to the story that is at Pikesville High School, right? Because he talks about specific people.
Yes, he does.
In this as well, right? And he's got specific...
He mentions a couple of names.
He's got specific grievances as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what are the chances of this being AI for me? Very, 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 very small.
What are the chances? I mean, how could that possibly happen? That could never happen. And how could anyone at the school possibly have an axe to grind? How could any faculty member conceivably want to concoct some race hoax in order to bring down the principal? When have people ever lied about being victims of racism? Somehow that kind of thinking still exists in this country in 2024 after about 10 million other race hoaxes have been exposed. But even so, to the great surprise of virtually every media outlet in Baltimore, the ruse came crashing down yesterday when we learned that this recording is indeed yet another race hoax. That's exactly what it was. The principal never said any of the things on that recording. There was no recording. It was all created by AI. Watch.
On January the 17th, 2024, the Baltimore County Police Department became aware of a voice recording being circulated on social media. It was alleged the voice captured on the audio file belonged to Mr. Eric Eisworth, the principal at the Pikesville High School. We now have conclusive evidence that the recording was not authentic. The Baltimore County Police Department reached that determination after conducting an extensive investigation, which included bringing in a forensic analyst contracted with the FBI to review the recording. The results of the analysis indicated the recording contained traces of AI-generated content. Detectives obtained a second expert opinion from a forensic analyst with the University of California, Berkeley, who also determined the recording was not authentic. Based off of those findings and further investigation, it's been determined the recording was generated through the use of artificial intelligence technology. Through their investigation, detectives allege Mr. Darien, who was the athletic director at the high school, made the recording to retaliate against the principal who had launched an investigation into the potential mishandling of school funds.
All right, so that's the basics of the case. Oddly enough, watching that, there are certain parts where his voice doesn't match up with his mouth, so it actually looks, parts of that look AI-generated too. Maybe the whole thing is AI. Maybe none of this is real. Does Baltimore even exist? I don't know. That's the era we're living in now. But in any event, in this case, the audio was generated by an AI program that's extremely simple to use. All you have to do is upload a short audio file containing a voice. It could be just a single sentence, and then you can have the AI say whatever you want in that person's voice. Now, police have, as you just heard, arrested the school's athletic director, a 31-year-old man named Dazan Darien, and charged him with creating this AI voice file. Specifically, he's been hit with a variety of offenses, including stalking, theft, disruption of school operations. What would Darien's motivation be for making up a fake recording like this? Well, it turns out that he was under investigation by the principal for allegedly paying teachers under the table using school funds. And there was also other alleged misconduct as well. So Darien's contract wasn't being renewed. And in response, he decided to generate fake evidence that he was being fired because he's black. On the recording, the principal supposedly says that he needs to get rid of black employees by any means necessary, including DJ, which is Darien's nickname. DJ is the guy whose black ass is going to be dragged out of here, according to the recording. That's him. And then Darien allegedly shared the audio file with another teacher, who's a black woman who has since resigned. And then she, in turn, shared it with a student who put it on social media. As of now, nobody else has been charged with any wrongdoing except this athletic director. Now, as a quick aside, you notice what Darien chose to include in the fake audio? There's an angry complaint in there about black students performing poorly on test scores. It's interesting that this is something the athletic director thought to include in his fake racist screed. That's how broken Baltimore schools are now. The only impassioned comments you'll hear about black students failing their tests is in an AI-generated deepfake designed to destroy the life of the school's white principal. Because that's one thing. Another thing I thought when I heard that recording, I said, like, yeah, some of the language here is not great, but like at least he cares about it. I didn't know the administrators of these schools actually even cared that much about the fact that these kids are failing their tests. At least there's some passion here. I don't know. Look on the bright side. No, it turns out, no, that was all fake. But this case was apparently solved by analysts who determined conclusively that the recording was AI. And for some reason, the media apparently didn't speak to any of these analysts in January when they were visiting the principal at his home. But the Baltimore Banner interviewed several of these experts last month, and they determined with 99% certainty that they were dealing with AI based on some telltale signs. One of the experts said, quote, there's some signs of editing, like putting different pieces together. This has the sound features of AI generation. The tone is a little flat. Additionally, there was a lack of consistent breathing sounds or pauses in the recording, as well as unusually clean background sounds. The analyst also noted, quote, sudden and incredibly short stops between bits of dialogue that indicate the absence of sound, which itself indicates some level of file manipulation. So this is pretty open and shut at a technical level if you know what you're listening for, which most people don't. I don't. It was not a sophisticated deepfake at all. Which is very troubling because even then, even though it was not sophisticated, it took months until the truth came out and this principal could clear his name. That's how long it took the FBI, Berkeley, and several other AI experts to vindicate this man. What this means is that we have officially entered into a new era of race hoaxes. And we all knew that this would happen eventually. This was going to happen. And now, well, we have crossed the Rubicon. And sad to say, it's only going to get worse from here. We already know there's a deep desire and willingness among many people to frame innocent people as racist and bigots. And AI will be used relentlessly to that end. And that's another reason why the objections from that radio host are so absurd. But why would anyone ever do this? What do you mean? People do this all the time. We get fake claims of racism constantly. It's just that until now, nobody has used AI. But of course, if they have that ability, of course they're going to do it. And before long, the technology will advance to the point that even experts won't be able to identify AI quite as easily. You know, the tone of the audio will be less flat. There won't be any awkward spots in the recording. They'll be able to, you know, all of these problems that signal to experts that it's AI. Well, the people that are developing this technology, they know about those rough spots and they're going to iron those out. What happens then? Keep in mind again that this fake recording, which does at least sound like a real human being, at least it does to me, was made by some dumb race hoaxer working at a public school. I mean, what could someone with a bit more expertise and access to better technology do even now with our current technology? And what happens when the video deepfakes become as convincing as the audio ones? Then we're going to have real problems. Fake hate crimes will be the least of our worries. I mean, we're talking about the total destabilization of society. That's what we're facing. Imagine AI-generated videos of police officers killing unarmed black suspects. Is there any doubt that that kind of video would cause nationwide riots? A few weeks ago, an armed black criminal out on pretrial release actually shot at police officers on camera, and the media still nominated the shooter as their new George Floyd. And that's just the beginning. Picture AI-generated politicians, you know, committing gaffes or caught in scandalous positions or declaring war. What happens when AI Joe Biden announces, say, a ground invasion of Russia at 7 p.m. just as the real Joe Biden falls asleep? You can imagine the hysteria, especially when an AI-generated Karen Jean Pierre heads to the fake podium to confirm it. You know, it's obvious to me that we need some kind of legislation in place to stave off the catastrophe that we can all see coming. And unfortunately, judging by the fact that it took several months to disprove this AI hoax, it's clear that most people aren't ready for that conversation. Millions of people see AI-generated clips that affirm what they already believe, and they don't have any interest in checking if the clip is real or not. In this case, the AI clip of the principal supposedly affirmed the fiction that white supremacy is alive and well in Baltimore. It was too good to check, so it went viral immediately. That's why the AI-generated narratives will keep coming. That's why the number of victims will continue to rise. And it's why, to save not only jobs and reputations, but also in the future lives, we need to rein in this technology while we still can. Now let's get to our five headlines. Rose Sparks is revolutionizing the way men tackle challenges in the bedroom. This dual-action prescription merges the powerhouse ingredients found in Viagra and Cialis into one formidable treatment. But it's not merely about what's inside these tablets. It's about their mode of delivery. Rose Sparks leverages the benefits of sublingual administration, meaning the tablet dissolves under your tongue. This method allows for rapid absorption directly into the bloodstream, bypassing the digestive system. The result, a quicker onset of action, 15 minutes on average. This significantly reduces the wait time typically associated with traditional pills. Moreover, the longevity of Cialis' active component means it works for up to 36 hours post-dose. With Rose Sparks, spontaneity is back on the table. Connect with a provider at ro.co/Walsh to see if Rose Sparks is right for you. ro.co/Walsh. Again, that's ro.co/Walsh. Compounded drugs are permitted to be prescribed under federal law, but are not FDA approved and do not undergo FDA safety, effectiveness, or manufacturing review. Only available if prescribed after an online consultation with a provider. So yesterday we talked about the wrong way to handle these pro-Palestinian campus protests. Greg Abbott, you know, signaling that people would be arrested for anti-Semitism and hate speech, framing this explicitly as a war against free speech and political expression. That was the wrong way, as I explained in great detail. So let's look now at the right way. And for that, we turn, as always, to Florida. Reading from the Tallahassee Democrat, as pro-Palestinian student protests intensify on college campuses across the nation, about 40 Florida State University students set up an encampment on Landis Green early Thursday morning, but the Occupy Landis movement was short-lived. Campus police made the students take down a handful of tents that were set up for a mere 5 minutes on the grassy space pre-dawn due to FSU Regulation 2.007, which prohibits camping on university lands, according to a university spokesperson. So 5 minutes. So Florida State got their encampment down in 5 minutes. Not 5 days, 5 minutes. Meanwhile, over at the University of Florida, they also dispersed a campsite pretty quickly. And all they had to do was circulate a flyer. And I want to show you. Here's what the flyer says. And here's the caption from somebody named Stu on Twitter, who identifies himself as a citizen journalist. His caption is, "Breaking: University of Florida students chose to break down their encampment after being handed This allowable activities and prohibitive items and activities flyer. University of Florida's chapter of Young Democratic Socialists of America said UFPD handed out flyers with draconian new regulations on them, clearly designed to stop our liberation zone. They will not win." Okay, well, here's what the flyer says. Allowable activities: speech, expressing viewpoints, holding signs in hands. Prohibitive items and activities: no amplified sound, no demonstrations inside buildings, no littering, no camping, no sleeping, no unmanned signs, no blocking egress, no building structures, chairs, stakes, benches, tables, no camping, including tents, sleeping bags, pillows, etc., no disruption, no threats, no violence, no weapons. And then at the end it says, consequences for noncompliance. Individuals found responsible for engaging in prohibited activities shall be trespassed from the campus. Students will receive a 3-year trespass and suspension. Employees will be trespassed and separated from employment. Perfect. Well done. You know, it's that simple. It is that easy. As I've been saying all along, it is so easy to deal with this problem. It's so easy that it's not even really a problem, or at least it shouldn't be. It is so easy to solve. And especially when you're dealing with people who don't want to experience real consequence. These left-wing protesters, especially on college campuses, especially on Ivy League campuses, of most of all, not the University of Florida is an Ivy League campus, but these are not people who are so desperate that they've got nothing to lose and that they're willing to suffer any consequence for their beliefs. They're not. They're actually not willing to suffer really any consequence, but it works out for them because most of the time there aren't any consequences. So all you have to do is put some real consequences in place and all of this goes away that quickly. So you notice how they handled it, right? Notice first what they didn't say, University of Florida. They didn't say that certain kinds of speech aren't allowed, except for, you know, threats of violence. But they didn't say that certain points of view aren't allowed, right? They didn't say that. They did not condemn hate speech. They didn't say anything about anti-Semitism because that's irrelevant. It's got nothing to do with it. That's not the issue. They didn't frame this as some kind of crackdown on speech, as Greg Abbott did. Instead, they said speech and political expression are allowed, but if you're going to do it, you need to follow the rules, and they're the same rules as everybody else. Now, while these protesters are saying, oh, they're inventing new draconian restrictions, no, they're not. These are the restrictions that are in place for everybody. And you know something? If I wanted to organize a protest at University of Florida or any of these college campuses, I would certainly be expected to follow the same rules. In fact, I wouldn't even be allowed to do the protest in the first place. But let's just say any conservative, if YAF, let's say, on any college campus wanted to have a political demonstration, they would be absolutely expected to follow all of these rules. Okay, no conservative group would ever be allowed on any college campus ever to set up tents and stay overnight. We all know that would never happen. On no college campus would they ever allow that. And if they would not allow it for anyone else, then why should they allow it for these people? You're not special. You're not special. You follow the same rules everybody else follows. They're the same rules. You're not being persecuted. You're not being specially targeted. It's just, these are the rules and you will follow them. They're the same rules, the same standard we hold everybody to. And that's it, you know? But that also means, like, don't go invent a new policy. Don't go invent some new, don't do that. You don't need to, right? Just hear the rules and follow those rules. And you know something? If they do follow the rules, if these protesters follow those rules and they go into the, they're outside and they're not, trying to set up a refugee camp outside and they have signs and they're expressing their viewpoint, then absolutely, I think they should be allowed to do that for as long as they want. They can keep it up for as long as they want. But occupying, setting up a liberated zone, no, you don't get to. I know on the left you think that you're entitled to do that because you've been allowed to do it in so many contexts, but you're not. Nobody else is allowed to do that. I wouldn't be allowed to do that. Nobody on the right is ever allowed to do that. You shouldn't be allowed to do it either. And it really is that simple, or it should be. NBC News has this report. The Canton Police Department in Ohio has released body camera footage from the night a 53-year-old man died after he repeatedly told officers, "I can't breathe," as he was handcuffed with his hands behind his back and he was pinned to the ground. In video of the encounter on April 18th, the man, Frank Tyson, can be seen lying motionless on the floor of a bar for more than 5 minutes before police check him for a pulse about 8 minutes before CPR started. In the nearly 36-minute video, police respond to the scene of a single car crash to find a downed power line in an unoccupied vehicle with a driver's side door open and an airbag deployed. In the video, a man in a white van whose face is blurred drives by, tells police that the man responsible is at an AmVets lodge down the street. Officers enter the lodge. A woman asks them to remove Tyson. When the officers approach him, he knocks over a bar stool and tells them to get the sheriff. They then attempt to handcuff him. Police identified Bo Schoenegg and Camden Birch as the two primary officers respond to the call. Tyson screams, "They're trying to kill me. They're trying to kill me." And then says, "I can't breathe." Shortly after the officers remove, they supposedly a knee on his neck for 30 seconds. Shortly after the officers remove his knee, Tyson again says he can't breathe, to which someone responds, "You're fine, shut the F up." After Tyson appears to stop moving, an officer is seen looking through Tyson's wallet and talking to bystanders. Tyson appears to be motionless on the floor for about 5 minutes while at least one officer talks with bar patrons. At one point, the officer jokes, "I've always wanted to be in a bar fight. I don't know if this counts." One of the officers returns in the frame. He asks whether Tyson has calmed down and whether he's breathing. And that's when they check and they discover he's not breathing. And he was pronounced dead at 9:18 p.m. Okay, so we still don't have all the information about this guy, Tyson, yet. From what I read, as reported by Colin Rugg on Twitter, he had just been released from prison after a 24-year sentence for kidnapping and theft. What drugs was he on during this incident? I don't think we know that yet. I'm sure that eventually we'll find out, or maybe we won't because they'll never tell us. But it's possible he wasn't on any drugs or alcohol at all. It's possible. I can't say it's impossible, but I put a lot of money. A lot of money that there's drugs involved. I don't know, but that would be my guess. And so that's the description of the video, and that's what we know about this guy. Let's watch a little bit of this video now. Here it is.
No, we're going outside.
No, you ain't killing me. You ain't killing me tonight. No, 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 you guys are killing me.
They're on here. They're trying to kill me. They're trying to kill me. They're trying to kill me.
So you basically get the point there, that they go in to try to arrest this guy, and he fights back against them, and he resists, and then eventually they have to restrain him, and then he dies in the process. Again, what did he actually die of? What drugs were in his system? We don't know that yet. But it's enough there that I don't know. I mean, if you, and of course, there's already an attempt to make, you know, we've had in the last few months, we've had several nominees for the next George Floyd. They're still looking desperately for one. Maybe this will be it. It bears similarities to the original George Floyd, just because you have the I can't breathe and the supposed knee on the neck. So we'll see if they're able to make this into the next George Floyd. Now, I think that it is certainly, as I've said many times, it's right at that time now, where it's approaching May. We're almost in May of the year of a presidential election. So, you know, we're right on schedule. Like, check the watch. And it's like, yeah, now it's time for the race riots. The only wrinkle is that right now, the people that would participate in those race riots are busy with the Palestine stuff. And so the only question is whether they can be redirected over to this to do a race riot, or if they can kind of do both, and if they'll just sort of fold it in and make it into a bigger thing. We'll see. We don't know. Of course, we know the left obviously very much would like that to happen. I think they'd like to have both. That's their ideal. Like, let's do both. Let's do Palestine. Let's do George Floyd 2.0. Let's put it all together. And these are, as I've said, I mean, these are the same activists. It's all the same. It's all related to each other. So it wouldn't be that much of a leap. We'll see if it gets that kind of response. As for the incident itself, listen, if you still watch these kinds of videos and your first reaction is to blame the cops, then I can't help you. I just can't help you. Like, you're hopeless. You are a hopeless case. You are absolutely hopeless. Because really all along, but certainly at this point, when you see these videos, like, you, first of all, you should just be totally exhausted with this. And your first thought should be, dude, just comply with it. They have every right to arrest you. You broke a law, okay? They suspect you at least of, like, running your car into a light pole, and you go into a place. You're not wanted. The people in the place are asking the cops to take you out. So they have to detain you. They have every right to do it. It's their job. What are they supposed to do when they try to detain the guy and the guy says, I don't want to, you're going to kill me? Are they supposed to say, okay, never mind, if you don't want me to, forget it. We'll wait till you're ready, sir. You tell us when. Is that what you want them to do? No. He's fighting, so now, okay, well, now it's getting physical. Now we have to use whatever force is necessary to get you to the ground and restrain you. We have no choice. There is literally no other choice. You tell me what the other choice is. And then everything that happens as a result of that, I'm sorry, it's your fault. You, as the belligerent a-hole who created the situation to begin with, the whole situation's happening because of you. The cops didn't create this. This guy wasn't sitting peacefully at the bar and they just happened to walk in and say, there's a black guy, let's tackle him to the ground for no reason. That didn't happen. They were called in because of you. And so you've created the situation, and then you're doing everything you can throughout the situation to make it as bad as possible for yourself. And so while he is screaming, they're going to kill me, they're going to kill me, he's doing everything he can to make sure that's exactly what happens. And I'm not saying that they actually did kill him, by the way, because that is certainly not at all, apparent, or that has not been proven. But he's doing everything he can to make sure that he does not survive the interaction. And so, you know what? That's it. Like, just stop it. I mean, if you don't want, you broke a law, you people around you are uncomfortable, you're making people feel unsafe because of your own behavior. The cops had to show up. So yes, comply. And I know when we say that, the idiots will respond, oh, what are you, some kind of bootlicker telling people to comply? Yes, if you're a criminal and you broke the law and the cops are trying to restrain you, yes, I want you to comply. I'm not telling him to give up his rights. Like, what right was being infringed on? Is it the right to drive your car into a pole? Is it your right to trespass? Is it your right to be belligerent and make people and harass people? Is that the right? No, there's no right being infringed on. So you create the situation where the cops have to come. Yes, comply. If you don't, it's on you. I don't care. You create the situation for yourself. Consequences are on you. It is your fault. And the idea that we're supposed to mourn again, some guy just got out of prison for 20, like someone who's contributing nothing to society, done everything he can his whole life to make everything bad for everybody around him. And then he dies by his own actions and we're supposed to bitterly weep and mourn. And I'm just sick of it and tired of it. I'm exhausted by it. And, you know, if you want to be a criminal and you want to live the kind of life where the cops have to show up, that's your choice. But when they do, comply. And because it's over, like they're already there. You're not getting out of it. You're getting arrested no matter what you do. So stop being an idiot. And that's it. It's game over. Like you're going to jail, right? So there's nothing you can do right now to stop that from happening. All you can do is make it worse for yourself. And so we have these people that they choose the latter option. They go through a door. You know, door number two. And they say, well, okay, well, I'll just make it as bad for myself as I possibly can. And then we're supposed to blame the cops. Give me a freaking break, honestly. All right, here's something I want to play for you. This is something positive for a change. Let's do that. Yeah, that'll be nice. This is a video that's gone viral of a young kid. Looks like he's maybe 7 or 8 or around there. At some kind of farm equipment convention, I'm not sure exactly. And people seem to find the video quite amusing in a good way. But let's watch it, and then I'll tell you what I take away from it. Let's watch a little bit of this.
I have a big old farm display that I play with them on.
So you're every day you go and move things around on it? Or
yep.
What? Yep.
Every okay. day.
What season are you in right now then with it? In spring planting or in...
It's kind of like winter right now, getting close to planting season, selling crops right now, getting crops in, unloading.
Semi-trucks moving, right?
Yep.
Yep. Planting already for spring planting.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Bringing fertilizer in.
Yep.
Bringing seed in.
Yep.
Yep. It's going to be a good year this year? What do you think?
I don't know. Don't know yet. Big, nice combine you got here.
Hey, appreciate that.
Yep. Came out with a new AFS 11, huh?
Yeah, AFS 11.
How many bushels is that grain tank on it?
That's a good question. 567 bushels. You know how fast we can unload that?
How fast?
6 bushel per second.
That's moving it.
That's more than I could ever hand. That's more than I'd ever need.
It's quick, right? So that big grain tank in 100 seconds, so it's got to 100, we can have that unloaded.
That's pretty quick.
That's pretty quick, right? Get the semi-truck back to work.
How many row of corn heads? Is that 16?
So 16 row 30 inch. Yep, 40 feet wide. Yep.
That is a big head.
Yeah.
This is what, this needs a mother bin to go right over, right over there.
Oh.
It deserves a mother bin.
So the kid's great, needless to say. It's a great kid. And one thing you notice about him, just from that 90-second clip, is that he seems both more sort of innocent and more mature than the average child his age, kind of at the same time. Because on the one hand, he's talking about his farm toys, his farm display, I think is what he said at the beginning. You know, and he's a young boy who likes tractors, which is awesome, very innocent, much better than staring at a phone, staring at a screen. But also he's far more mature than the average kid, both because of his knowledge of the subject, but also because of his ability to carry on a conversation with an adult. You know, you notice how he engages, he asks questions, he responds, he looks up at the person he's talking to. Many kids twice his age cannot have a conversation like that. In fact, I'd say most kids in high school these days lack this kid's conversation skills. But of course, the main thing that comes across again is his knowledge of farming and his passion for it. And that's why, although the video is fantastic, it's also sad in a certain way that people find it so shocking and unique. Because this is how most boys that age should be. This should not be so unique that it's like startling. And I'm not saying that most boys should be deeply interested in farming necessarily, although it's a great thing for boys to be interested in. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I mean is this, that every boy should have a subject that he loves and he knows backwards and forwards. And it can be farming, it can be dinosaurs, it can be cars, it can be baseball, you know, it could be outer space. It can be anything, really. But every boy should have a passion like this. And if you have a son and he doesn't have a passion, if you honestly, you got a kid around this age, a little bit older maybe, and you look at that and you say, well, I don't know, you know, what's my kid's version of the farming? Like, what's his version of that? If that's the case, then you should help him find it. Help him find his thing. And his thing might change. Like my oldest son, 10 years old, he has cycled through several different obsessions over the years. But in the last year, he has settled really firmly on wilderness survival. Wilderness survival is his sort of very intense interest. And once he found that, it's like it's the only thing he cares about. He wants all the tools. He wants all the survival gear. He wants all the supplies. He wants to go out in the woods and spend all his time out there and build shelters and... He wants to go out in the woods and start like campfires, which is something we have, you know, that could go wrong. So we have to work with him on that one. You can't just go start a fire wherever you want. But that's what he wants to do. He wants to read books about it. He wants to watch videos about bushcraft, watch movies about survival. He wants to talk about it a lot, like frankly, more than any of us want to talk about it, but that's what he wants to talk about. And we embrace it. We encourage it because this is his outlet. This is also a starting point. You know, if your son has something like this, it's a starting point, and he learns so many other things related to that subject that he's interested in. So, you like with my son, we can get him to learn and engage with pretty much any subject if we relate it back to wilderness survival and camping and that kind of thing. If we relate it back to the woods somehow, then he'll, no matter what the subject is, even if it's a subject he thinks he doesn't like, we can get him to engage with it. And this is what boys do. You know, they fixate. And there's a certain intensity that comes with being a boy and being a man. You know, it's a masculine, it's a male trait to intensely fixate on certain things. And that's a great thing for parents to harness. And to point in healthy directions. Because what happens if you don't harness it? You know, if you don't do anything to foster this quality in your son, what happens then? Well, two things happen. First, inevitably in this society, he will still fixate on something, but his fixation will become focused entirely on entertainment. That's what his fixation will be. Screens, you know, different forms of media. That's going to be his thing. And as he fixates on the screens, his intensity will die down because the screens have a numbing, neutralizing effect, which is why, as anyone knows, if you go into a room where maybe you've let your kids sit and watch TV for a little bit too long and you walk in and they're just like zombies just staring at the screen. You could talk to them and they don't even hear you, right? You could wave your hand in front of their face and it's like they don't even blink. It has this hypnotic kind of neutralizing effect. Whereas other things don't do that. Now, if your kid has a real interest, like farming, you can talk to the kid there. He's invigorated. He's excited. He's passionate. He's engaging. It's not like that when the kid is just sitting, staring at the screen, just like this, slack-jawed, right? And look, before you start yelling at me, I know you're going to yell at me anyway, no matter what I say, so it doesn't matter, but I'm not saying... Okay, that boys shouldn't have access to entertainment. I'm not saying that. Obviously, a kid is going to watch TV. He's going to watch movies. He's going to maybe play video games or whatever. And that's fine in moderation. But if you allow that, the entertainment, the screens, the media, to be your son's thing, to be his prime focus, his great interest, then in most cases, now, there may be some cases where from there, a kid, like maybe he goes on to become a film director, you know, maybe he goes on to become a video game designer or something like that. Maybe he's in the media world and he'll trace that back to his. So that will happen sometimes. But most of these kids that are sitting around all day just consuming media, they're not going to go into any business that has anything to do with any of that. And it's not going to become a real passion. For a few of the kids, it'll become a real, like, passion. But for most of them, it's not a passion. It's just it's a distraction. It's an amusement. It's just a recreation. It's a way of passing time. And the problem is that in that case, for most kids, if their great interest, right, is just staring at screens in different forms, he's not going to reap the benefits that he would if he was focused on farming or outer space or wilderness survival or even baseball. Because these things out in the real world, out in the physical world, when a boy focuses on those things, he learns about the world. He develops useful and edifying skills in the world. He usually ends up socializing around that interest. Like, the screens are isolating. The screens are singular because most of the time kids do that just by themselves. In fact, you know, even when I was a kid, there was at least more of a social element to the screens. It was like you would get together with your friends and like maybe you'd play video games. You'd all be in the same basement playing video games. But now even that is lost for the most part. And so it's all singular. It's all alone. And then the kids never develop social skills. And they never develop any interests outside of the screens. So this is what I would encourage you. As a father of four boys myself, find your son's passion. Find the thing that he can focus on. Find the thing that will harness his intensity. And if you're saying to yourself and you're being honest and you're thinking about your own son, let's say, and you're saying, well, he doesn't have a lot of intensity. Well, he does. Every boy has it in them, but you just haven't found it. You've allowed it to be extinguished, or not entirely extinguished, but greatly suppressed, probably because he spends all of his time just staring at screens. So it's in there, but you have to find it. You have to harness it. Like the thing that just like lights his soul on fire, whatever that is. And once you find it, once you help him find it, you'll know, because it just clicks. And for this kid, it's farming. Like farm equipment, that's his thing. He loves it. And it's great. This is what every father of a boy looking at that video should be able to say to some extent, oh yeah, my son, that's like, I see my son in this kid. And if you can't, then, you know, fortunately, it is a fixable problem if you try to fix it early enough. The iconic Leftist Tears Tumblr is back, but there's only one way to get it, and that's by becoming a new Daily Wire Plus annual member. Now, this isn't just any membership. This is your pass to ad-free, uncensored shows from your favorite Daily Wire hosts like me, plus unlimited access to Daily Wire Plus movies, series, and documentaries like my new series, Judged by Matt Walsh, and my groundbreaking hit documentary, What is a Woman? Get a new Daily Wire Plus Insider annual membership, and we'll throw in a free Tumblr, or really put your money where your values are with an all-access membership and receive two Leftist Tears Tumblrs absolutely free. Join now as we fight the left and build the future at dailywireplus.com. Now let's get to our daily cancellation. For our daily cancellation today, we turn to a woman named Ash Putnam. She has gone viral with a video complaining about the trials and tribulations she's faced while trying to find a job. And most recently, she says she was turned down by TJ Maxx, which certainly, you know, has to be a tough pill to swallow. Based on my limited experience with TJ Maxx, it would seem that they hire pretty much anybody with a pulse. Now, granted, that means that TJ Maxx employees are held to a higher standard than we hold, let's say, the President of the United States. But still, it should be a relatively easy hill for any prospective applicant to climb. But sadly, Ash Putnam found that her TJ Maxx dreams were crushed due to one factor that becomes very obvious the second you look at her. Watch.
So I wanted to come on here and talk about something that is really starting to annoy me. So I applied for a job at TJ Maxx a few weeks ago, and they denied my application. They couldn't even call me. They just sent me some automated email. So I went in today and I was like, so what was the reason I didn't get hired? And she was like, oh, like, you just, like, don't have enough experience. There was candidates that had, like, more experience than you. And, you know, I asked her if it was about my tattoos, obviously, because I know a lot of places don't like tattoos. She said that wasn't the reason. I don't feel like that's true, but whatever, I'll leave it at that. So I'm just wondering how, like, teenagers and young adults who haven't had a job before, how are they supposed to get employed? And, you know, I hate that my tattoos are such a defining factor for me getting a job or not. Like, just because I have tattoos doesn't mean I'm not gonna be a good worker. Like, I do not understand that at all. Because quite literally, some of the most smart, intelligent people I've ever met are people with tattoos and piercings.
Well then, ma'am, I think you need to meet more people. Though I understand it may be difficult to meet people when you have not just one, but two giant images of demons emblazoned permanently on your body for everyone to see. Which means presumably that she got the first giant demon and then walked around with it for a bit and then said to herself, you know what would really improve my life? A second demon. Those along with the face tattoos and face piercings and nose ring and everything else, she looks very much like a pincushion that a disturbed child has scribbled all over. So let me offer just two very brief thoughts about this. First of all, it's become increasingly clear that thanks largely to the younger generations, the internet has become a place primarily for people to whine about their lives. Well, it's primarily a place for porn, as it's turned out, but second is the whining, which is a kind of misery porn. And it's true that there has always been whining on the internet, just as there's always been porn, unfortunately. But if you go not very far back in time, even just 5 years ago or so, you'll find that it used to be much more common for people to err on the opposite extreme. Like, one of the major criticisms of social media was that people used it to project an unrealistically positive, sort of put together, confident version of themselves. They made their lives seem much better than their lives actually were in real life. And of course, you still hear this criticism sometimes of social media, but it's not as common as it used to be. And that's because increasingly, social media has become a tool for amplifying your complaints and your grievances and your general objections to the realities of life. People are trying to, you know, present themselves as put upon and weak and their lives as pitiable and full of suffering. Well, you know, I think we were better off before. It is healthier to project an unrealistically happy image of your life than an overly dour and negative one. It's healthier for the person posting the content and for everyone else consuming it. Yeah, at least that's aspirational. At least, like, if everyone is putting stuff out that makes their life seems great, it could have an aspirational effect at least. The instinct to complain to the world about your life is far more toxic than the desire to make the world envious of your life. Neither option is particularly healthy, but the former is significantly worse, I would say. And now the internet is full of videos like this where a woman, for some reason, has decided to inform millions of people that she can't get a job at TJ Maxx. That's an embarrassing piece of information that we don't need to know and shouldn't know and wouldn't know if you didn't decide to shout it into the digital bullhorn. Second, about the tattoos. I would like to think that I don't need to explain why it's a very bad idea to get tattoos on your face and neck, but that self-destructive practice is becoming more and more common, so apparently I do need to explain it. So I'll just say this. If you're considering going down this road, you should know something. When the rest of us see somebody with tattoos anywhere above the collarbone, we automatically assume that the person who with those tattoos in those places has three things to go along with all the ink. One, daddy issues. Two, a meth habit. And three, at least one STD. In fact, not only do we assume that, but those are the only things we see when we look at you. The tattoo becomes a barrier between you and the rest of society. We can't engage with you or have a conversation without seeing the tattoos. The tattoos scream at us, and we feel burdened by trying to pretend we don't notice them. If you have face tattoos and you're talking to somebody without face tattoos, The only thing that person without the face tattoos wants to do is say to you, okay, hang on a second. Why do you have that shit all over your face? And usually the other person will not say that because they want to be polite, but it takes great effort to prevent themselves from blurting it out. And even when they're looking at you, like they don't even know, like usually you want to look at someone, you want to make eye contact when you're talking to somebody, but you got all this stuff all over your face. So we're just like, we're looking up at all the stuff. We're like, what is that? Why did you get that? Why did you get that on your forehead? What was it about that? What does she have on her forehead? It's like a sun or something. You really want, is that design so amazing that you want to have it on your forehead forever? You want it to be the first thing anyone sees when they look at you forever? Really? Is it that great of a design? I've never seen a design that was that amazing. But this is the thought process that we're having while we're talking to you. And it's quite exhausting. And that's why by having those scribbles all over your face and neck, you have made yourself unemployable in most industries. You are even unemployable at TJ Maxx, where they expect you to at least keep your meth habit to yourself. And really, I'll say this. I'll go even further, and I'll say that tattoos in general are a dumb idea. And I say that elephant in the room as somebody with two tattoos myself. And fortunately, my tattoos are on my arms and can easily be covered. I also don't need to cover them because there is no dress code for podcasters. And my tattoos are Christian symbols, not just random designs, so I don't find them embarrassing. I'm actually quite fortunate because way back when I got mine done, back in those bad old days, the big trend for white guys in their early 20s was the tribal armband. Advertising not so much that you smoke meth or grew up fatherless, but rather that you listen to Nickelback, which some would say is even more shameful. And I was smart enough to avoid falling into that trap, at least that much. But even so, you know, here's what I'll say. If I never got any tattoos, I wouldn't go get them now. Like, I wouldn't look at myself now and say, you know what, I need a tattoo. I need something permanent. I need some design permanently on my body forever. I wouldn't do that because nobody regrets not getting a tattoo. Like, that is nobody's life regret. Lots of people regret getting them. The best you can hope for as you grow older, if you get tattoos, I'm just telling young people this now as someone old and grizzled at the age of 37, is that the best you can hope for is that you'll sort of be indifferent to your tattoos as you grow older. Perhaps not actively humiliated by them, but also not terribly excited about them. You're not going to wake up every day, look down at your tattoo, and then say, man, thank God I have this on my body. You might say that for like the first few weeks or even months, but think about how you'll feel a decade later or 20 years later. Like the charm wears off. And the point is that nobody's life has ever been improved by having an image permanently drawn on it. Lots of people's lives have been hampered by it, on the other hand. And if that does happen, you only have yourself to blame, just as our friend Ash Putnam, sadly, can only blame herself for her predicament. And that is why she is today, I must say, canceled. That'll do it for the show today and this week. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Talk to you on Monday. Godspeed.